this is not just a space that deserves some philanthropic kind of attention. I absolutely am convinced that it is an area of overlooked investment opportunity. There is so much great innovation there. There are people who are coming up with fantastic science, really problem-driven solutions, and it's going to lead to great investment opportunity. So it's there's just a really nice confluence of tremendous need and great opportunity that's being largely overlooked right now. So I'm really excited about where we are with this space right now.
Welcome again to the Not Many Adults podcast, pioneers for children's healthcare and well-being. My name is David Cole, and together with my wife Hannah, we are the co-founders of UK children's charity Thinking of Oscar. This is episode 2 of season 2, and today is a really special one. We've been talking throughout the first season about the importance of investment within child health. Today we are delighted to be speaking to John Parker. John is the founder and principal of Boston-based Springhood Ventures. John founded Springhood to address the funding gap in child health innovation. Springhood provides critical early investment and support to companies developing important healthcare solutions for children. John has 25 years in the alternative investment industry, together with over a decade of philanthropic experience, and has created a new model using investment dollars to make a difference in the lives of children. This conversation with John was an absolute pleasure because he's not only a friend of ours, but he's the only VC that we know globally investing solely in children's health. John, hi, thank you so much for joining us on the Not Many Adults podcast.
Thanks, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I think it would be great if you could just start off by giving us a little bit of background on you and how you got to be, you know, where you are today, please.
Yeah. So by background, I'm an investment generalist. So have worked all over the world, Japan, Australia, dipped into things in South America, Africa, Canada, Europe, all sorts of, you know, fantastic things on lots of sectors, largely in venture capital, private equity, and some in the hedge fund space. I bring that experience to the children's health space through my involvement in a foundation here in Boston called the Charles H. Hood Foundation. So this is the Charles Hood Foundation is a family foundation that has been focused on pediatric research for close to 80 years. Most of what we do is we make grants to, and we do it within the New England area. Given your global audience here, so these are the Boston area, but Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Maine. We do a lot of early career supportive researchers, and we do some thematic grants, and those change over the, every 3 to 5 years, we change the themes around that and trying to find areas of sort of high unmet need, but where we actually think we can get something done. So I joined that board about a dozen years ago, and was part of a new generation of trustees there who all of a sudden we were like, okay, how are we going to move forward into the 21st century and take this organization that was doing great things but was literally my grandfather's foundation. It is a family foundation. I'm a family member. And take what was sort of a 1950s kind of setup and move it into the 21st century. And as we looked at a lot of things we could do, one of them was going down the path of making early stage investments. And it just hit me at a point in life, without getting into all the details there, but it hit me at a point in life where I had some time to put into it, and I had the relevant experience on the deal side. Children's health was new to me. Life sciences was new to me. So it sort of it was started as a project, and great, I've got a ton of resources within the foundation I can dip into on the science, learning about what the needs are. We had a great network, all these things. And so I started thinking about the deals and how you do this out of a nonprofit organization and all of that. And everything just fell into place very neatly in terms of what we were trying to achieve. And what we were trying to achieve was with this is getting closer to the patients. We wanted to get, we fund a lot of good science that's ends up in great publications. We make great contributions to science, but it's often hard to see that connection to the kids we're ultimately trying to help. So getting into early stage investments where we're trying to get some of these solutions to the marketplace and to the kids who need them just made a lot of sense. We also saw that as a gap in the marketplace where it was tough to get funding. So I took it on as a project for the foundation. Like I said, it hit me at the right point in my career, that I had some time to do that. The project took over my life because it is just the coolest thing I've ever done. There is so much great activity, people coming up with, whether it's entrepreneurs or researchers or clinicians, nurses, parents. There are just amazing innovations being developed out there. To be at this point in time where we can bring some of these things forward, it's hard bringing it forward because there's some particular challenges we can get into around pediatrics. It's a great time to be doing that, and nobody else is doing it. So it's great to be able to contribute some things on that end. So,
and talk to us a little bit. So Springhood is your organization that I guess has come as a result of that. So just talk to us a little bit about Springhood.
Yeah. So, Springhood I've set up as the management arm of the investment activities we've got. So right now I've got a fantastic situation where the foundation that we have here is the single LP, as we call it. So the single investor in a fund kind of setup. It's an evergreen situation. We make a couple of investments a year. We can do it every year and hopefully forever, and start to scale that as money starts to recycle back into the fund. Springhood I've set up as sort of the front end of that to manage that effort. And at this point, it's matured enough. Now I'm looking to take that out to a larger audience too and raise capital for a larger multi-investor fund that probably looks a little more traditional in nature than just having a foundation as an investor. But Springhood's given me the flexibility to go out to a larger audience so that I can do more of this.
Fantastic. Now, our podcast is very much around the positive side of pediatric healthcare. We want to look at, and that's why we're talking to you, because of, you are a you're unique in this field, as you've just said, in terms of the investment opportunities that you're looking to put in. And we want to hear about some of the great work that you're doing. But I guess we have to talk a little bit about, why are others not doing this? Why are there not more organizations trying to invest in pediatric startups?
So there are a number of paths to go down there, but let's talk about a couple of the obvious ones that have been, I'll call them historical biases against pediatrics. Most obvious is small markets. Most kids are healthy. And I'll compare it to, without trying to make it sound bad, all older people are sick. Most kids are healthy. If you look at your population of patients over 75, well, most of the people out there who are over 75 have, it's to some degree or another significant healthcare issues. Kids all have, every kid has something, but for the vast majority of them, they are minor. The ones who are sick tend to be very sick, but it's still they're small markets. You get into things like rare disease. You get, you know, there are some other conditions that aren't genetic, but by and large, you continue to look at the numbers and they're relatively small. Pediatric cancer in the US, I'm not sure the global numbers off the top of my head, but in the US, you're talking 16 to 18,000 patients a year, which, yeah, it's a lot of patients, but when you're looking at the broader cancer markets, it's nothing. So to allocate resources to developing specific solutions for kids, and that's an area where actually we do quite a bit, but it's sometimes hard for investors to make those numbers add up. So the market size is one thing. Another sort of more obvious one is some of the challenges of doing clinical trials with kids. You've got there are just some different sort of practical and ethical considerations there that can scare people off. And I'll describe it in just sort of a high level way that we sort of the way some people think about it is if you screw up a clinical trial with an 80-year-old, that's bad. And but maybe there'll be some negative press around it for a pharma company or whatever, but it'll blow over relatively soon. You screw up with a kid, it's really bad and nobody wants to do that. It will, it can sink a company, besides just being a really awful thing that nobody wants to do. So you've got to be extra careful there. And I think there's a history of actually happening and setting, not just companies, but setting science back for decades, where if something goes wrong in a clinical trial with kids, nobody wants to touch that science even for years. So you have those are a couple sort of the obvious biases that you have against pediatrics out there right now. It could go down the list of some other issues, and some of it, again, it's the interplay with those where it's hard to recruit for the clinical trials because of the small markets. You do have extra costs associated, at least sometimes you think about it. You look at the medical device space, it's just that much harder to add in another design component where with adults, you can often have, it's easier to get to the one size fits all. At least, again, I come back to perception. We really shouldn't, because there are very different kinds of adults out there. For example, the obvious one being men and women. The same solution doesn't always work for me versus my, at 6'2" versus my wife who is 5'2". The fact that we often have the same dosing on drugs or medical device doesn't make a lot of sense. But with kids, it's even more extreme. You may need, I'll go to the device side. You may need dozens of devices to cover the ages of, when you got a 2-year-old versus a, 4, 6, 8, all the way then through the teen years. You've got just very different things going on to the title of your podcast. They're not just mini adults. They are doing completely different things over this span of time, because they change so rapidly, that you need more variability in whatever you design. So those are just a few of the things that make it challenging. I could probably go on with a longer list.
No, I think that's, you've touched on, a few things that I was really hoping you were going to talk about, to be honest with you, in those aspects. And it's such a dichotomy. I think we talk a lot about, and we hear a lot about, the preventative elements that need to come into healthcare. It's all very reactive based, and even just calling it healthcare, I mean, it's not really, it's sick care. We only really react when someone's sick. So it's getting there first. It's helping to prevent illness before it happens. And there should be no better spectrum or demographic to do that in than children, given everything, given that they've got their lives ahead of them, and they are going to be the doctors of tomorrow and the industry leaders of tomorrow and everything else, right?
Yeah, and it's a really important point to take what I've just described as some of the reasons not to do it, and then turn the tables on that and talk about all the reasons why you do it. And that is from a society-wide perspective, that's first and foremost. You're talking about years and years of life. Again, you compare it to some of the larger market folks. If you take it from just the equation from just a sheer number of people at one point in time to what are the years of life you are trying to improve, all of a sudden the kids, those numbers rise because you're talking about for every individual of, you know, say you're talking about another 70 or 80 years of life versus the extra 6 months you're providing somebody. So if you start to think about the market in terms of quality years that you're giving to a person, it's not just a kid, you're giving it to an adult, because somebody put this really well to me once, and it had nothing to do with pediatrics. It actually was from a basketball coach of one of my kids. And he, you know, they, I don't know, my kids were, you know, he's like fourth grade. He goes into this basketball camp, and the guy stands up at the beginning of the thing. He's like, I am not here to, you know, help form, you know, better kids or whatever. He's like, I'm here to help you raise better adults. And I thought that was such a great concept, that everything, you know, we do for our kids and everything, we're not raising kids, we're raising adults. And we want them to be healthy, productive, happy adults who then become parents and grandparents themselves. And when you really think about that, it's such a great concept when, yes, we're trying to highlight, again, the kids are different, but kids are people, and they've got this great future. And so you're not just doing a kid thing. It is a human thing. So sorry, that was a little bit of a sidetrack. But to think about the impact you can have on a human life, and if you do it early, getting to that sort of preventative thing, and you can take care of whether it is a very, you know, an acute medical condition where you can keep a child alive, you can improve their outcomes so that they can have a quality life, you can improve, sort of reduce the stress, the toxic stress in their life, so that when they are, 40 or 50 years old, they have sort of normal average health outcomes instead of that of somebody who is 20 or 30 years older than them. People who end up with, you can help people have better sort of cognitive development early on, so that when they are in their 20s and 30s, they can earn more income for their family, end up in happier marriages, and raise better kids themselves. All of these things start in childhood. So it is an amazing place to start the healthcare process. And to bring it to an investment term, because I'm an investor, it is the highest point in the value chain. There is more net present value in investing a dollar in the first years of life than at any other point in time. So I can think about it in sort of the touchy-feely side, or I can bring it down to the quantitative side, but it's you have to be there. And there is huge value. It is challenging to capture that from an investor's point of view. But we can dig into some of the ways you can do that. And I think there are some real positives around why pediatrics should be focused on from an investment point of view too. But I can jump into that, or you can ask me the question, or, you know, lead the interview the way you want.
I do want to come back to that very much. So I think the economics, you know, is not where most of our conversations are coming from, but it's unarguable that the point that you made a moment before was that by having a healthier society, then you also have a much more productive society. And so fixing the health issues up front is first and foremost about the quality of that individual's life, but the world is a economically richer place as well by fundamentally and kind of as a societal level addressing that. On the same topic of the economics, one of the conversations that David and I were having when we were thinking about this chat with you today was about when we're talking to startups, so we both of us meet startups, they're now with our professional hats on or charity hats on from on a regular basis. And what advice would you have, given all of the challenges that you outlined at the beginning of our conversation, what advice would you share with a startup that wants that would like to make a difference to child health, but it doesn't seem like a sensible idea necessarily?
So every innovation, every company, they're all unique. They have different market size, they have different approaches into a hospital setting or a consumer setting or whatever it is. So it is somewhat individualized by the company. But in a general sense, I will always push every company to just, you have to make sure you figure out how to make the economics work. And you can do it with pediatrics, but passion alone, and just having a solution that will help alone won't get you there if you haven't figured out the larger picture about how are you going to create an economically scalable, economically sustainable business model that usually involves getting to some level of scale. And that's not always possible strictly on the pediatric path, but there are still ways you can bring the pediatric piece into it where that you can't get there on pediatrics alone. So I will often encourage companies that have a great innovation that can help kids to think about, okay, how can you start with kids? And it's a good place to start, but how can you use that as a launching point for a technology that maybe you can then get into other markets? It's interesting. One of the areas where I see a lot of overlap, again, especially the device and the digital health side, is taking things that are useful with kids. There tends to be a lot of overlap with military uses for one reason or another, whatever reason it is. I just see it all the time. I think partly because you need often highly flexible, non-invasive things that work under a variety of conditions. Some of those things that work, say, in the NICU, all of a sudden, you know, it's like, well, where else is this applicable? Well, yeah, maybe in the field, maybe under stressful conditions. I see things that would be useful in the space health field, that's an even smaller market than pediatrics. But there are interesting pieces of science where you're starting to really take innovations that are going after the really tough problems, and then you're bringing them back to more common uses. And so there are often great opportunities to do that. And I encourage companies a lot to really think about how you're going to do that. The inclination is then for many of those companies to say, oh, well, I'll just go after that other market and skip the pediatrics. So I also push very hard. And not just because I want people to be in that space, because it is logical to start with pediatrics. To think about, don't just go after those big markets, because you tend to have, it's more expensive to launch in those markets, and there tends to be a lot of competition in some of those bigger markets. Whereas if you can go into a pediatric space to start with, you often can get through the regulatory hurdles a little bit easier because, well, certainly in the US, the FDA is really eager to get more pediatric things to market. And so you can get orphan designation, you can get fast track various things. Certainly on the drug side, we've got the priority review voucher program that gives a real financial incentive to doing a smaller market, an orphan or neglected disease innovation to support that. And so I encourage people, look at that pediatric path as a way to essentially get to proof of concept or proof of value faster and for less money. And at the same time, you are really solving an incredibly important problem. If you go to the adult market first and try to come back to the pediatric market, it becomes much harder to justify from an economic point of view because, and I'll use the example of cancer here. If you go out with a solution for a pediatric brain cancer and you start there, it's really interesting because you can get, you can probably do a smaller clinical trial, you can get through the FDA faster, and you may have this financial incentive of a priority review voucher. The markets are absolutely tiny when you say, look at a brain cancer area, but the need is huge. So if you start there and you've got the proof of concept, it's very easy to then bump up to the adult market and apply that science to adults. You don't have to redo your safety tests. You might have some dosing work because you need to do a little bit more, but you don't have a lot of the hurdles. If you come from adults to kids, it's really hard. You got to start from scratch. And so maybe, so yeah, and I've got a company in my portfolio doing this where they're starting with medulloblastoma. They are then looking, they'll have in front of them some other solid tumor market, including breast cancer market, which is huge. And it's a really interesting story. If you were to start in breast cancer and you actually, where there's a lot of competition, but you're going to have to run a much larger clinical trial, it's going to be more expensive, it's going to take longer. And the competition's really stiff. But even if you succeed, and especially if you succeed, you'll never come back to medulloblastoma. The economics don't support it. And a board of directors of a company who then have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders is going to say, yeah, no, we can't do this. We can't spend the money on something that's not going to help our bottom line at that point. And it doesn't make strategic sense anymore. So that's sort of a long explanation of how I think about some of the benefits of going into pediatrics first and how you can leverage it into a much larger platform that can drive good economics. So I try to encourage those entrepreneurs. I'll come back to the original question and say, that's how I encourage entrepreneurs to think about this when they can. That doesn't fit every case, but it fits a lot of them.
Stay with us as coming up on the Not Many Adults podcast, John talks more about investment opportunities, but also gives us some examples of where he's seen success. I think that advice is just fantastic. And, I'm hoping that what you just said, if people are listening to this, then they've got two things on their mind. First of all, they're really kind of thinking to themselves, how do they take that and say, okay, what's our larger market opportunity? But secondly, we've got to come back. You've said that you've seen a few startups or opportunities which move in from pediatrics to the field in terms of combat or whether it be space. You've got to give us some examples about those, because I was just thinking to myself, I didn't want to stop what you were saying, but.
Yeah. So I'll give you one. So we've invested in a company out of Houston, Texas called Non-Invasics. And it's really interesting. So the technology they've got, which is it's a brain monitoring technology, measure oxygenation in the brain. And they're addressing things like hypoxia in the NICU. The technology was funded originally on DOD funding. The guy who came up with technology was originally was actually thinking about some military uses. And so got grants from the Department of Defense here to do that. But when it came to starting the business, the guy they brought in as CEO said, he really started researching where the pain points, where can we get early traction? And the answer was in the NICU. There are these very little babies who are they're high risk babies. And there aren't good solutions for figuring out, whether they are at risk for a hypoxic incident or not. And the need is huge. Market, the patients are accessible, all of these things. And there just weren't good solutions there. So they really started to launch the company, that's where they focused. Great progress, and we came in, helped them, and it's tough. It was pediatric space, so they had some tough years of getting going with that. And that was part of was a nice early test case for us, where we were able to come in and support them as they really built out that case ended up developing a relationship with Philips and getting the funding they needed to build it out. And they're still going with, they're not done with that journey yet. But now they are coming back around and have been working on taking this device and putting it into a helmet for Air Force pilots to try to detect situations where as pilots are going at Mach, whatever they're going at, I don't know enough about it. They're not going to black out. And this is something that is very hard to predict. It's and it varies from individual to individual, and I believe from flight to flight. And so to be able to have something that might hook in with a sensor, like, okay, you got to pull back on the throttle, that's pretty cool. So there are lots of other applications, but that's just one case where I'm looking at that is such a cool example of something that, it was started here. They made that business decision to say, hey, it makes sense to start in pediatrics. And then it's coming back around to the original intent there. And look, again, the market of pilots who are flying at Mach 6 or whatever is probably a relatively small market again, but it's, again, showing how you can leverage that into other things. And it will, this is something that will be able to, help with in the field brain monitoring, other things. They're able to apply the technology to a lot of other things, including sepsis and different things. So it's one example in there.
But as you say, even though it's a small market, the impact is massive. There's still a business case, just because if you prevent something bad happening, and that means you've still got a life and you've still got an expensive plane.
Yep. Well, exactly. So those are both. So the case of the NICU and talking about the Air Force and everything, those are situations where the price point's actually pretty high. So you can make the economics work. I mean, even more of the plane, because exactly, you're saving a $1 billion plane from turning into a pile of scrap. Besides the obviously the human life that would be involved. NICU too. The NICU is a place with a lot of expensive equipment. And it's, if you can figure out how to get an infant out of the NICU in 6 days instead of 14, massive cost savings. So there's some value, and you can charge for, a decent amount for that, which, again, that fits some business models. Look, I look at other things too, where, that's also, that's not a solution that helps everyone in the world. So we do try to factor in some of those things that are solutions at very different price points, which is, how do you get health act, better health solutions to people who are at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, the so-called bottom of the pyramid. And there are great solutions there too. I think about examples of what we're doing where perhaps it's not always pediatrics to adults. Sometimes it is one pediatric thing that can actually go and support the broader market thing, where you're starting again with the tough problem. So, for example, one of the companies we've invested in, which is really I'll call it a global health access play, but it's a digital health solution to try to give clinical assessment tools to untrained caregivers. And their initial focus is caregivers of children ages 0 to 5. And they do have some potential. They have tremendous potential actually to take that to the adult market. But the interesting case there is that they are starting really in places like sub-Saharan Africa, and getting this this tool where people everywhere have smartphones. It's just it's absolutely mind-boggling how smartphones have proliferated around the world. Clean water might be a challenge. Shoes might be a challenge, but there are a lot of phones out there. And so to be able to bring these tools to people who may see one or two actual doctors in the course of their whole life is really amazing. And if you can start to, put on, a solution on one of these phones that gets the same level of efficacy as a sort of a general practitioner in doing an initial assessment, that's super cool. And it's highly scalable. The marginal cost of doing that is so low that you really can get it out there to everyone everywhere. And we're looking at the company that's doing that, and they are starting to now think about how do we bring that back into the United States, where it's a little more challenging because it would enter a regulated environment. And so it's going to add some costs. But to think about, you know, again, it is going after what might be a less profitable market and then thinking about, okay, how do we bring it back into some of those more profitable markets? And then ultimately to, you know, into adult too. But there are always ways to think about that. That business model there.
I've got another question about an opportunity that has wider reach. And we've been asked in the past about this, and I think it's a really tricky area. And I'm curious about your experience or your perspective on it. And that's to do with mental health. So you've talked about devices, you've talked about work around new drugs and about serious illnesses. But what experience do you have about supporting innovation that supports mental health in children and young people?
No, that's such a good question to ask about that, Eric, because this is especially in, we've seen over the last few months as coronavirus has put stresses on families, kids, the education systems, everything. This is the problem that's only growing. It's not going away. As I've watched this over the last, half dozen years, it has been a challenging area from an investment point of view, but largely because just a lot of the tools have been in their formative stages. I am really excited about the potential, primarily on the digital health front, to bring some of these tools to people who can take advantage of it. The market size potential, the users, and especially if you look at adolescents out there, they are going and finding the tools that do exist, and they are using them. And we just need to continue to bring robustness and sort of clinical efficacy to these tools to make sure that we've got good evidence-based solutions that we can measure how they're doing and try to figure out how to work through some of the noise that is sort of inherent in the digital space, because it's very easy to create solutions. Creating a good solution is challenging. So I have spent some time thinking about it. I have not yet invested in some of the things that are most interesting there around, say, things that might deal with depression or anxiety some of the isolation issues that especially teens, I think, are going to face here, but preteens as well. It's a little different situation with the younger kids who are absolutely having issues, but I think it's a little bit of a different set of issues. At least in this country, teen suicide is a massive problem. I'm really interested in trying to, understand how people are thinking about, can we put tools in place to help prevent, to get those red flags up there early and through, whether it is assessing speech patterns, movements, texts that might be sent, or other, indications of a coming problem. To manage that, because it's tragic. It's obviously the worst of all outcomes for the individual, for the kid, we're focused on there, but for families, for the communities, for their friends, these are problems that just they expand. They sort of waterfall out in an awful way. So I'm encouraged by some of the things going on there, there is tremendous potential from an investment point of view. I will say too that if you can get through the noise and find the right solutions, these again are highly scalable solutions. very, you know, there's some different challenges, but unlike, say, a medical device going into the NICU, where it's, you're not selling that many of them, and the sales process is hard and it's slow and everything. Some of the digital health solutions like this, and what I'm seeing is as being having tremendous potential in the mental health space. You actually, unlike a lot of pediatricians, you've got large markets. You can get the solutions out there, I think, quickly and at low cost, and they have the potential to be really good financial investments.
Yeah, and you answered my next question as part of that when you were talking about the noise, because to me it seemed like finding the great product was one part of the battle, but the route to market for that product, you know, the noise and just getting and reaching the market, that's the trickiest part to succeed in, I feel like, but
absolutely.
I'm not an expert now.
Yeah, no, you. There are different routes. I mean, there's not just one way to do that. But figuring out what that channel is to the patient that deals with, first of all, getting it to the patient to begin with, making it sticky so that you've got, you know, which I think the technical term would be sticky, but I don't know if it's technical, but the tech term, the clinical term would be adherence. It's really important that you don't end up with what I think is often referred to as sort of the Fitbit problem, where you've got something that's used really actively for 3 to 6 months and then ends up in a drawer. Mm-hmm. You don't want that. You really need tools that don't interfere with people's lives, but will stay there and that people will use on a regular basis. And again, I think that what's happening with kids and figuring that out can be a great launching point for things that can help people at all levels, because look, I have no doubt, Amy, that you see it as well, that people in all walks of life at all ages are, you know, feeling the strain of the world we live in right now. And we're that's going to be with us for at least a bit. When this one's done, there'll be something else that we have. There are just a lot of points of stress in people's lives. There always have been, but there always will be too. So
John, are you looking to increase your portfolio right now? And if that is the case, if there was people listening to this who have got an idea or, you know, a fledgling business, or they're looking to bring a startup in, at what point you know, would you be looking to speak to them, or you know, what advice would you give them from that point of view?
Yeah. So, a couple things. So yes, I am actively investing. So, and there are two routes for that. So out of the foundation I described earlier, we continue to make, it's a small number of investments. We look at an awful lot of them, but we support a couple a year. We do that on a rolling basis, and we'll continue to do that forever. When we're looking at across different sectors, so biotech and medical device, digital health, we'll look at diagnostic tools. We really do focus on more medical things and evidence-based solutions. So we typically stay away from pure consumer plays have not branched into things like education or some of the sort of the non-health early child development things, which there are some amazing things being developed, but it goes outside of our boundaries. People ask often, yeah, what are the ages? And there are always gray areas around this, but basically from birth through till I won't even put an age on it, but through the development of the person, and I say that where, having teenage boys, physically, the growth stops a little earlier before the mental side does. I might look at a mental health solution that goes with somebody with kids well into their 20s, actually. Whereas if I'm looking at something that's more of a sort of like a surgical thing, like an orthopedic thing or something, the cutoff there is probably at a younger age while they're still growing. So we're looking really broadly across that. And we look early. So I like to have things in that portfolio that are in what we describe as a sort of pre-seed or seed. So it's we need a company, not going to invest in something that's just a science project in academia. It's, you know, I want that company to have been, or it can be ready to be started, but you got to have a CEO, got to have, you know, maybe a team involved too. So it has to, there has to be something there, not just an idea. And hopefully it's had some funding to develop that concept, whether it's in academia or, just friends and family that's moved that along to at least a certain point. But I also don't want to be too late in that round. I like those early stages where I can really be helpful. So I look at that stage. What else? The other side of it is, for me right now, I do expect that sometime in the coming months here, there will be an additional pool of capital that'll be doing essentially the same thing, but that's going to be this new fund that I mentioned earlier. And that will be able to be a little more aggressive and take more investments in a shorter period of time, and do a little more follow-on funding with that. So, but same theme going across the different sectors. We do look across geographies, although most of the things, you know, everything we've done so far is in the United States. I am open to looking at things from anywhere in the world. Understand that there are practical considerations as to how that can be managed. So, it's not impossible to do things, you know, especially these days as we're seeing through our, talk across the pond here. But there are just some considerations there. So happy to look at any and all. I also often ask Sarah, you know, how do people reach out to me? It's like I've got a LinkedIn page. People can connect with me through that. You can sort of look in there and see how to do that. Read my little bio blurb and you can reach out to me through that, or otherwise shoot me an email and with a real good explanation of what the innovation is, what the company is, and I will take it on board and see how it fits into what we're doing. I say one of the things I do look at is there are so many great ideas, and I always warn people, it's like any other investment program. I can only do a fraction of them. I would love to help tons more. I try to be helpful where I can. And a few of them will get money. I wish I could put money into 10 times the number of amps, hence raising a fund to do that.
John, thank you so much. I think, you know, we try and do a few things on these podcasts. One is certainly educate ourselves, and I definitely think that we've done that today and hopefully others. And the other is inspire. And I think a lot of what you've said will hopefully really inspire people to look into, you know, getting into the pediatric market place, feel that there is an opportunity if they've got an idea to move it forward. We always try and end the podcast with one question, which is, if you could change anything within child health, what would that be?
You got me on the spot. If I could change any one thing, so it would have to go to this view of taking the longer term view. I think this is happening globally. It's certainly happening in the United States. And it gets back to your comments earlier on sick care versus healthcare. If we could take a perspective of it, that there are, it is the right thing to do from an investment point of view, from a societal point of view, just sort of any way you turn it, we are looking longer term. It's not something where you can just flick the switch and make this happen. It is a sort of cultural perspective and how people are thinking about everything. We don't do that in this day and age. It's an age of instant gratification. We have social media. We're looking for things all the time, and you see it in politics and the stock market, and not to get on a soapbox with that stuff. But if there were mechanisms out there that helped incent both, everyone from investors to entrepreneurs to industry players to the hospitals themselves to and payers, government, to take a longer term perspective. I believe that would push people towards taking better care of kids. And I think it's incredibly important for, again, not to try to sound too high-minded about this, but it's really important for the world. And you see this in countries everywhere, and it's health, it's education. And if we don't raise kids to be great adults, going back to the earlier theme there, we're sort of screwed. I have tremendous, I don't want to sound too negative with it, because I have tremendous faith in humanity, in people to rise to the occasion and do the right thing. But I would love to have a little longer term focus on doing the right thing.
Thank you.
That might be just like dreaming and rainbows and unicorns, but
that's what we need to do. So I think that's what we need to. We need to think big. We need to, not have a finite mindset. To quote Simon Sinek, who I do quote quite a lot. It needs to be long term. So I think that final piece of advice is just great. So, John, thank you so much for joining us on the Not Many Adults podcast. We really appreciate it. And we
have a pleasure
to see you in person sometime soon.
Let's hope. Good. Thank you for letting me ramble about what I do.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Not Many Adults podcast. I think we will certainly take away John's final point there of taking the longer term view on doing the right thing. You can find all the details of not only Thinking of Oscar, but also Spring Her Adventures in our show notes. As ever, if there is someone that you think that we should be talking to, or if there's a topic that you'd like us to cover, then please do get in touch with us. And again, you can find all of our contact details in the show notes as well. If you do enjoy these podcasts, then please share them with colleagues and friends or anyone else that you think might be interested. Also, if you could give us a review on your favorite podcast channel, that would be wonderful as well. Coming up in season 2 of the podcast, we talk to other startups who are moving into pediatric healthcare as their priority. We hope that you can join us again soon.